I never saw his day to Ryland. I never had a chance to really know how he did it. What he did was pure genius. Wrong, but nevertheless genius. He noticed the older antidepressants like amitriptyline decreased psychic ability, while the newer serotonin reuptake inhibitors were either neutral or they enhanced it. Dad was able to do a post-mortem study on a clairvoyant. The subject demonstrated a sevenfold increase in serotonin receptors in hippocampal and amygdala tissue compared to controls. You're losing me. She waved a dismissing hand, not looking at him, still pacing. Parts of the brain, never mind, just listen. Moreover, it was a receptor subtype with completely new binding characteristics. He sequenced the protein, found the associated gene, cloned it, and inserted the gene and expanded it in a cultured cell line. He elucidated the protein structure with computer modeling, and then modified an existing serotonin reuptake inhibitor to have high specificity for the newly discovered ligand. The tricky part was to keep the molecule lipid-soluble so it would cross the blood-brain barrier. Presto! Suddenly the radio was tuned to the right station. Baby, I'm not understanding a word you're saying. Lily didn't realize it, but she had shifted from hurt daughter to interested scientist. Can you speak English for me? Lily continued to pace, quick, agitated movements betraying her inner turmoil. She was speaking more to herself than to him. Not all subjects have the same abilities. Like a poorly performed weightlifter, the answer was more drugs. Using a threefold program of training was a stroke of brilliance. Each separate avenue provided a way to enhance the natural abilities, and he used pulses of electricity, much like they've tried with Parkinson's disease, in the hopes that it would stimulate more activity. But the little girls all began to fall apart on sensory overload. He found there were a few anchors in the mix, and all the other girls gravitated toward them. He thought it was their young ages. And they began to have severe emotional and physical problems, seizures causing brain bleeds, hysteria, night terrors, symptoms associated with severe trauma. I think the pulsing electricity probably caused the brain bleeds, but I'll have to study it further. They were just children. We were just children. She turned away from Ryland, crossing her arms across her breasts. He turned off the natural filters and then abandoned them all. I was a subject. He called me that. Subject Lily. Staring away from him toward the computer, she looked desolate. He realized the girls were going to overload burnout, so he hastily found them families, came up with some plausible explanation for their problems, and turned his back on them. He kept me because I was an anchor and he hoped to use me again. She turned her head then, her blue eyes cloudy with pain. And he did. Lily. Her name was an ache between them. Her beautiful name, so much like her, pure and perfect and elegant. He wanted to strangle her father with his bare hands. Ryland knew there was much more to it. Peter Whitney was a scientist, driven to achieve. He wasn't a man who would deliberately hurt another human being, but he was ruthless in his methods. Ryland could see him purchasing the little orphan children from a country that didn't want them anyway. He had the money and the connections. When he decided to try again, he used grown men. Already well-disciplined, she looked at him. I don't even know my real name. Ryland managed to catch her shirt sleeve and reel her in. He pulled her against the bars close to him, slipping his arms around her, unable to stop himself. She was stiff and resistant, but he tucked her beneath the shelter of his shoulder, close to his heart where she belonged. Your name is Lily Whitney. You are the woman I want at my side night and day. I want you to be the mother of my children someday. I want you for my lover. I want you for the person I turn to when the world gets to be too much. She made a soft sound of protest, a cry deep in her throat, and tried to turn away from him, but he caught her face with his hands, bent over her protectively, instinctively shielding her from the camera even though it wasn't functioning. I know you can't hear me when I say this right now, but you were Peter's world. He was a man without laughter or love, driven by his brain's need to learn more. I saw the way he looked at you. He loved you. He may not have started out that way, but he grew to love you. He may not have brought you into his life for the right reasons, but he kept you because he loved you. He couldn't bear to part with you. You made him know what love was. Ryland would have said anything to take away her pain, but as he uttered the words, he felt they were true. She shook her head in denial, not daring to believe, because if he were wrong, it would be another knife through her heart. You can't know that. His gray eyes glittered with truth. I do know. Remember what he said to you. He wanted you to find the others and make it right. He was talking about those other girls. He knew what he did was wrong, and he attempted to make up for it, finding the children homes, setting up trust funds for them. It was wrong, Lily. But he didn't operate on the same kind of wavelength as the rest of us. He'd caught the rest of her father's intentions in her mind and used the knowledge shamelessly. She waved her hand toward the surface.
They're out there somewhere. He poked in their brains, turned something on they can't turn off, stripped away every natural filter they had. He left us all to fend for ourselves.
She looked up at him.
Higgins and the people here can never know about the girls. If they find them, they'll use them. They'll kill them.
You have to destroy the tapes, Ryland said. There's no other way to protect everybody, Lily, to protect others in the future. Your father knew that, or he wouldn't have asked you to destroy his data. They couldn't pull any information off his hard drives. He made certain he never recorded anything of use where they could get to it.
Those tapes are the only things I have that might give me a clue as to how to reverse the process, Ryland. If I get rid of them, there's no going back.
We already knew that, honey. Peter knew it, too. He repeated his experiment, a little more refined, with older, much more disciplined subjects, but the end result was still the same. Breakdown, seizures, trauma, sensory overload.
I have to view them all. I can't take a chance on missing any of the details. I have a photographic memory. What I read or view, I'll remember. It's going to take time. My father was suspicious over at least two deaths, Ryland, and I'm worried about you and the men. He wanted you out of here, enough to ask me to help. After reading his report, I think he might have had reason to worry. I agree with him that you and the others aren't safe here. There are records of phone calls from my father to several military officials, yet no one pulled the plug on Higgins. I have no idea how far up the chain of command the stink goes. That's your department. You have to figure out who you can trust. I'll try to feel out General Rainier, but I haven't been able to reach him. He's been a family friend since I was a child.
He nodded, his gray eyes intent on her face. Lily, we have to talk about last night. We can't pretend it didn't happen. Lily shook her head. He wanted her to believe he could fall in love with her when he didn't even know her. They didn't know anything about one another. He thought it would reassure her that in some way she was lovable, but it only reinforced her belief that her father had enhanced the chemistry between them. Ryland Miller and his men needed sanctuary. She couldn't distance herself from him when he needed her so much.
Arlie, who's head of my security, showed me two entrances to tunnels that lead through the property to my home. My father used them when he didn't want anyone in the house to see people he brought in.
Are you certain you can trust this man?
Lily shrugged. I gave up being certain of anything, Ryland. I can only hope he's on my side. The entire east wing of my house will be set up to keep you and the men hidden. There's something like 15 rooms along with my suite of rooms, and the wing is entirely self-contained. Arlie is filtering in supplies, and you can use the house as a base, but there are patrols and security cameras inside and out. I'll give you the codes you need to get in.
Thank you, Lily. His heart swelled with pride in her. Damn, but she was courageous and willing to put herself on the line for his men, for him.
I believe Higgins is going to arrange for more accidents, and I think he has a ghost walker or two of his own, unless one of your men is working with him, in which case your escape isn't going to work.
My men are not traitors. He made it a statement.
I would never have believed someone in my household would betray my father, but someone did. I would never have thought someone here at Donovan's would help murder my father. But they have. And I would never have thought my father would have taken a child from an orphanage and experimented on her. But he did. Don't count too heavily on loyalty, Ryland. You'll get your heart handed to you.
He was silent, feeling the waves of sorrow and shame wash over her.
I've already visited your other men on the pretense of asking their cooperation and further testing. I couldn't find Russell Cowlings. According to the log, he had a seizure over a week ago and was rushed to the medical unit. I checked with the hospital, and they signed him out to transport by medical helicopter within 20 minutes of receiving him. That doesn't wash. If he were that unstable, they would have needed time before they sent him off. I'm trying to track him down, but I'm afraid he's lost. Nobody seems to have the paperwork on him. I put in a call to Higgins, but he hasn't returned it.
Damn it, Lily. Ryland hung his head, his fists clenched at his sides. Russell's a good man. This isn't right.
No, it's not, she agreed. None of it's right.
Lily, her blue eyes drifted over his face, stopping his words before he could say them.
She shook her head. I don't want whatever happened between us to go any further. It's not right, and I'll never trust it. You don't know me. How could you possibly think you could love me? I don't know myself. We haven't even talked.
I've walked in your mind. I know what kind of woman you are. I know exactly who you are, Lily, even if you think I don't. I see what you've done, what you're doing for us. That's extraordinary, whether you want to think so or not. He had her wrist again, his thumb sliding back and forth in small caresses over her sensitive inner wrist. His eyes on hers, he brought her hand to his mouth, his tongue tasting her skin.
You don't play fair at all, Ryland.
His smile actually climbed to his eyes, a brief flash that fanned an ember deep inside her into sizzling fire. It isn't a game to me, Lily. I saw you. I knew you were meant to be mine the moment I laid eyes on you. It doesn't matter that we're in the middle of all this bullshit. You're forever. You're real. As he reluctantly released her wrist, she backed away from the bars, cradling her hand close to her body. Her knuckles throbbed and burned, branded for all time by the brief, searing contact with his mouth. And if you think you're perfectly safe, he continued, remember, the cameras aren't working.
I'm sorry,
she whispered the words, knew he could hear her. She didn't turn around, keeping her face averted. It was humiliating to know she couldn't control the wild flares of desire she felt each time she was near him. Lily had always been in control. Now she felt confused and off-center. Look at me. Lily shook her head silently. You're a little coward, aren't you? He taunted. She did turn then, her eyes flashing sparks at him, her shoulders straight.
You better pray I'm not a coward, or you don't have a chance now, do you?
He swore, his hands curling into fists at his sides. He forced air through his lungs, tamped down his frustration, and focused on her. She was always so professional, and it annoyed the hell out of him. He wanted her in the worst way, craved her, and the shared dreams hadn't helped. It only left him wanting more. Needing her had eaten at him night and day since he'd first met her, crawled through his body until he knew the meaning of the word obsession. Every fantasy he had ever had, he wanted to share with her. "I'm sorry, Lily. You're not the one in this cage. My body's one hard pain and my mind is roaring at me. Jackhammers are ripping at my head." Lily heard the stark truth in his voice and hurried over to the cage to look at him closely.
"My God, Ryland!"
It was too late to protect her. He had kept up the barriers as best he could in his weakened condition, but he couldn't help trying to protect her. She was an enhancer, an amplifier, as was he. She felt his pain and echoed it back tenfold. He gripped the bars of his prison so hard his knuckles turned white.
"Why didn't you let me see this?"
she stilled in sudden comprehension.
"Last night, holding the bridge between us, you were doing that alone."
Her hand slid through the bars, trailed fingers over his face in a gentle caress.
"Ryland, you can't put yourself in jeopardy for me. The voices I was hearing, that was you, checking on the men. You're using your talents too much. You have to rest. Think about yourself."
He trapped her hand against his mouth. "I'll rest when they're safe. I talked most of them into this experiment. I could always do things other people couldn't. I wanted to do more. I'd like to blame Dr. Whitney, your father, but I thought it was a brilliant idea. I liked being able to walk into the camp of an enemy and suggest the guard look the other way and have him do it. The team, we were invincible together." The pain was real. Shards of glass stabbing deep into his brain. His pulse was too fast, and small beads of sweat stood out on his brow.
"Ryland, I would order you medication to sleep, but I'm afraid of what they're doing. I can get you something myself, but it'll take a little time. You need to rest and let your brain relax."
He shook his head. "I won't take medication. Just get me the hell out of here, Lily. I can rest when I'm safe with you." He made it sound so intimate, Lily couldn't force a protest. Ryland had given so much energy to her, to his men, he thought of everybody but himself. He smiled at her, a brief flash of his cocky confidence. "I was thinking of myself last night, Lily, not just you." The color rose in spite of her determination to ignore his every reference to their night.
"The guards are probably worried about me since it's been a while. You should conserve your energy and stop disrupting the security." "Where's your family, Ryland?"
She could only distract him. He allowed her hands to slip off of him only because he needed to sit down. Ryland made his way to the bed and stretched out, closing his eyes so the dim light couldn't pierce his brain. "My mother raised me alone, Lily. You know the story, unwed teenage mother without prospects." There was a smile in his voice that told her he adored his mother. "She didn't believe in living by other people's rules, though. She had me in spite of everyone telling her to get rid of me, and finished high school at night. She worked and took one class at a time until she got through junior college."
"She sounds impressive."
Lily sat in a chair near the cage as the computer blinked and the monitors came to life, signaling Ryland had given up shutting them down. "You would have liked her," he confirmed. "We lived in this old beat-up trailer in the middle of a cruddy park. Our house was the cleanest trailer on the lot. There were all these flowers and bushes around our place. She knew the name of every flower in the garden, and she made me pull all the weeds." Ryland rubbed his forehead with the heel of his hand. "Well, she pulled weeds with me. She believed in talking things out." A small, reluctant smile tugged at the corners of Lily's mouth.
"Is there a lesson in this I'm about to hear?"
"Probably. I was getting to it."
"I'll just bet you were."
Lily lifted an eyebrow at the guard as he rushed in.
"Is there some reason you're disturbing us while we're talking?"
Her voice was ultra-cool. Ryland couldn't help but admire how confident she appeared, dismissing the guard with her haughty tone. Her face was completely expressionless as her disinterested gaze drifted over the intruder. Ryland was pleased that she appeared an ice princess to everyone else, but burned like fire for him. The guard cleared his throat, visibly squirming.
"I'm sorry, Dr. Whitney, the microphones are fried, the security cameras weren't working, and—"
"They often don't work," she interrupted. "I see no reason to break a cardinal rule and enter a laboratory while I'm conducting a private interview. Do you?"
"No, ma'am."
The guard hurried from the room.
"You're supposed to be resting," Lily reprimanded Ryland.
"I am resting," he said piously.
"You're broadcasting blatant sexual interest."
"Am I?" He turned his head to grin at her. "I've been thinking about that. I don't think it's me at all."
"Really?"
He started to shake his head and thought better of it. "Yes, I've been giving it quite a bit of thought. Caden's an enhancer, but when he walks into the room, I certainly don't have this obsessive sexual attraction toward him." Lily choked back a laugh. Ryland felt the sound all the way to his toes. Her voice alone could touch him. He smiled in spite of his pounding head.
"Think about it, Lily. You're the one generating all the sexual feelings toward me, and you being an enhancer, the feelings are especially strong."
He did his best to sound innocent.
"You have burst a few brain cells, haven't you? You aren't a very good liar, Ryland. I'll bet you never got away with a single thing when you were a little boy."
For some reason, the thought of him as a curly-headed boy melted her heart. Ryland laughed softly at the memories. "It had nothing to do with my ability to lie. My mother had eyes in the back of her head. She knew everything. I don't know how. She just did. She knew I was going to do something before I did it." Lily laughed aloud, the sound playing along his body like the touch of caressing fingers.
"You probably confessed all and didn't even know you were doing it."
"Probably."
She had a real thing about education. I didn't dare slack off in school. I could get away with the messy room occasionally and forgetting to do my chores, to play sports with my friends, but I didn't ever miss a single homework assignment. She checked every one and insisted I read books every evening with her.
"What kind of books?"
"We read all the classics. She had a voice that brought the story alive. I loved to listen to her read. It was better than television any day. Of course, I didn't let on. I groused a lot, so she'd think I was doing her favors by reading with her." There was a shadow of regret in his voice.
"She knew," Lily said firmly.
"Yeah, I guess she did. She always knew." Lily blinked back tears.
"What happened to her?"
There was a small silence. "I surprised her with a visit, and she decided she had to make me one of her famous dinners. We drove to the grocery store. A drunk driver ran a red light and hit us. I survived, but she didn't."
"I'm so sorry, Ryland. She sounds like she must have been extraordinary. I would have loved to have met her."
"I miss her." She always had a way of saying the right thing at exactly the moment it needed to be said.
Like Lily, he was beginning to think Lily shared that same trait. "Do you think she was a natural adept?"
"A psychic?" "Maybe. She knew things, but mostly she was just a wonderful mother. She told me she took classes and read books to find out how to raise a kid."
Amusement tinged his voice. "Apparently I didn't react like the kids in the books."
"I'll bet you didn't."
Lily wanted to hold and comfort him. She could feel his aching loneliness, and it ate at her. She smothered a groan. It didn't seem to matter how reasonable her arguments were. The attraction to Ryland only grew in his company. The need to see him happy and healthy was fast becoming essential to her own happiness.
"I gave her a lot of trouble," he admitted.
I was always fighting.
Why does that not surprise me?
She lifted an eyebrow at him, but it was the small smile hovering along the curve of her mouth that caught his attention. He sat on the edge of his bed, raked both hands through his hair. Living where we did, we were fair game for comments, both Mom and me. I was kid enough to think I had to defend us, to take care of us.
You still are like that, she pointed out. It's a rather charming trait.
She sighed with regret, knowing time was slipping away from her. She enjoyed his company, enjoyed talking with him.
I have to go, Ryland. I have so much work to do on other things. I'll be back before I leave for the night to check on you.
No, Lily. Just take off. His gray gaze was steady on hers. He stood up, fatigue in every muscle of his body. He walked over to the bars, even though each step seemed to drive spikes through his head. She sucked in her breath audibly.
Maybe you should wait.
I can't afford to take the chance, Lily. Clear out and stay clear. She nodded, a small frown touching her mouth. Her profile was to him. She was deep in thought, and Ryland took the opportunity to allow himself the luxury of drinking in her voluptuous figure. There were no hard angles on Lily. She was all feminine curves. Her white coat was thrown over her clothes carelessly, moving when she moved, giving intriguing glances of generous breasts. When she walked, the material of her slacks stretched across her round bottom, drawing his attention. Her body was a blatant temptation he couldn't think about too much without going up in flames. He would have her. She would walk beside him, lie beneath him, come alive, come apart in his arms. She was his match in every way, she just hadn't accepted it yet.
"You're doing it again, Captain," she reminded, a gentle reprimand, the color flaring under her pale skin.
His hands curled around the bars of his cage, his palms itching to see if her skin was as soft as it looked. "Not yet, I'm not, Lily," he said the words beneath his breath, uncaring if she heard or not. She stood there, looking helpless for a moment, completely out of character.
"Don't let anything happen to you," she whispered, before she turned and left him there alone, with his pain and his guilt, and the cage holding him prisoner.
Chapter 7 The night was unexpectedly cold. Lily shivered as she looked up at the thin crescent shape of the moon. Dark clouds swirled across the sky, dulling the sparkling stars scattered above her. The wind tugged at her clothes and whipped strands of hair into her face and eyes. Threads of white fog whirled in small eddies, curling through the heavy wire of the fences, reaching toward her like ragged claws. She could smell the storm coming in off the sea.
"Dr. Whitney, I thought you'd gone home for the night."
A tall guard emerged out of the shadows. He was one of the older, much more experienced men. Looking at him closely, she wondered if he were military. She feigned fright, jumping as if startled.
"You scared me. I didn't hear you.
What are you doing out here?"
There was a trace of worry in his voice. She wasn't wearing a jacket. Lily shivered in the icy wind.
"Breathing," she answered simply, wondering whether to go home and get some sleep or go back and work so I don't have to face my father not being there.
She raked her fingers through her thick hair.
"It's cold out here, Dr. Whitney. I'll walk you to your car."
The note of concern caused tears to burn behind her eyes, to clog her throat. Grief welled up sharp and clear and strong. She had shoved sorrow and the knowledge of her father's death aside all day, held it at bay with work, all the while meticulously planning the aftermath of the escape. Guilt fed her stormy emotions. If anyone should be harmed in the escape, it would fall directly on her shoulders. Peter Whitney had told her what he wanted, what his last wishes were, but ultimately, it was her responsibility. There had already been enough mistakes made by the Whitneys, and she was uncertain whether she was doing more harm than good. What if the men couldn't survive outside the conditions of the laboratory? Their escape would give Higgins the excuse needed to carry out any plan he had to terminate any who opposed him. It would brand any in the military as a deserter.
Dr. Whitney?
The guard took her arm.
I'm sorry, I'm all right, thank you.
Lily was uncertain whether she would ever be all right again.
My car is in the parking lot over by the first guard tower. You don't have to walk me. I'm fine, really.
I was heading that way myself, he told her, urging her in the direction she'd indicated, his larger body between her and the wind.
As they walked, something inside of her went very still. Knowledge blossomed, flared into full life. She felt the movements, the presence of the others in the night. Chameleons. Ghost walkers, they called themselves. Phantoms moving, blending with any terrain, at home in the dark, in the water, in the jungle and trees. They were shadows within the shadows, able to control their heart and lungs, able to walk among the enemy unseen. Lily felt them, the vibration of power they wielded, as they moved through the high-security compound, keeping the guards looking the other way with the sheer force of their minds. The plan had been for Lily to be far away from the area, her alibi indisputable, but she'd lingered, drawn by guilt and fear. It was difficult to break into the facility, but much easier to break out. Ryland Miller and each of his men had psychic abilities to varying degrees. She knew Ryland had planned to lure Colonel Higgins to his cell so suspicion would fall directly on the colonel as the last man to be with him just before Ryland was able to escape. Ryland would free the others. The men would find safety in numbers at first, allowing their various skills to benefit everyone. But once out of the compound, it was far safer to scatter, going in twos or singly to their ultimate destination, her home. She allowed her gaze to slide casually along the deeper edges of the buildings, the towers and equipment in the compound. Her chest was unexpectedly tight. She couldn't spot them, but she felt them. They were moving through the high-security compound like the phantoms they called themselves. A dog barked somewhere to her left, set her heart pounding. The animal stopped abruptly, as if silenced by a command. Her guard tightened his hold on her arm, suddenly uneasy. He swung his head in the direction of the dog. Lily stumbled, distracting him.
"I'm sorry."
She sounded more breathless than she intended as he caught her, preventing her from falling.
"It's dark out tonight. The storm is coming in faster than anticipated."
"It's supposed to be a bad one. You should get home before it hits," he advised. "The gusts could reach 100 miles an hour, and your car is small."
She had purposely refused the limousine, knowing every car would eventually come under suspicion, and a limousine could easily transport several escapees outside the compound. The guard's concern was nearly her undoing. She was wound much tighter than she realized, grief for her father swirling close to the surface, threatening to spill over. Distress for the knowledge she'd been part of her father's scientific experiments, guilt for the escape battering her conscience, fear that someone would be hurt or killed gnawed at her until she was afraid she might scream. Tears shimmered in her eyes, blurred her vision. Were the lives of the men going to be any better on the outside where no one protected them? She had to tell herself at least they were safe from deliberate harm.
"You're shaking, Dr. Whitney," the guard observed. "Maybe you should go back inside and spend the night here."
He stopped in the middle of the yard, bringing her to a halt beside him. Lily forced a bright note into her voice.
"I'm fine, just a little shaken up. I've had weeks to get used to my father's disappearance, but the thought of facing an empty house in the middle of a storm is daunting. We always talked together. Now there's just silence."
Without warning, lightning burst across the sky. The flare instantly lit the compound and surrounding area with a white-hot spotlight. To Lily's horror, the flash illuminated the dark shape of a man only feet away from them. His eyes were fixed on them, focused, steady, the eyes of a predator. His hand moved, and she caught the glint of a knife.
Caden.
She recognized him instantly. He was one of the stronger talents. Lily threw her body between the phantom and the guard, knocking into the guard so that they both went down in a tangle of arms and legs. The flash of light was gone, leaving them trapped and vulnerable in the darkness. They both hit the ground hard, Lily bumping her head hard enough that a soft cry escaped. The guard swore, rolling to his feet, reaching to bring her up with him just as thunder clapped loudly, splitting the sky apart so that rain poured down in long, drenching sheets.
"You shouldn't even be contemplating driving a car if you're this afraid of lightning,"
the guard warned, his hands holding her still for his inspection. She realized he'd been looking in the opposite direction. He hadn't seen the nearly invisible threat so close to them. For all she knew, they could be surrounded by the phantoms. The idea sent a surge of adrenaline racing through her bloodstream. The rain ran down her face and soaked her clothes. Would it be better to go back to the building or go to her car? Where would the guard be the safest? Lightning veined in the clouds, sizzling and crackling, zigzagged from ground to sky, shaking the earth beneath their feet and once again illuminating the compound. Caden had melted into the night, but in the flash, she saw another face. A pair of merciless silver eyes raked her face, fixed on the guard, still holding her arms. Ryland was close. So close, she could almost reach out and touch him over the guard's shoulder. The brief flare was gone in the clap of thunder, leaving inevitable darkness behind. Lily sagged against the guard, terrified by the striped menacing mask on Ryland's face. He was highly skilled in hand-to-hand combat in martial arts. He carried death in his large hands. She didn't know what to do, whom to protect. Whether to keep the guard's attention centered on her or whether to warn him of the very real danger.
"Relax, sweetheart,"
the voice drawled lazily in her head, played over her senses like a velvet glove. "I'm not going to hurt your hero, and get out of the damned rain before you catch pneumonia." Relief rushed through her. She raised her rain-wet face to the sky and smiled for no reason at all.
"You can't catch pneumonia from rain."
"We need to get out of this right now,"
the guard said, tugging at her arm to get her moving. "I'm taking you back to the building. It's dangerous out here."
"I agree," she answered wholeheartedly.
"I have two more men who haven't made it out. Keep him away from the labs."
"But I can't face going to the labs again tonight. Let's head for the general cafeteria,"
she improvised swiftly. The guard flung his arm around Lily in an attempt to keep the rain from her, and together they sprinted across the long expanse of pavement toward the largest row of buildings. Lily was looking at the ground, her eyes straining to see where she was going, when the next bolt of lightning hit. This was much closer, and it rattled the windows and shook the towers, causing one of the guards to yelp in fear.
"Those men should get off of there,"
she yelled, just as the thunder exploded. The noise was astonishing, so loud it nearly knocked them down. Her ears hurt from the impact.
"The towers have lightning rods. They'll be okay,"
the guard assured her, but he sped up, dragging her with him. On the heel of his words was a loud explosion as the tower took a direct hit. Sparks rained down, fire in the sky, bursting like gems in the air. Lily was looking around her frantically, shielding her face, wanting one last glimpse, one last look. But the shadow figures were gone, and she was left alone in the raging storm. She felt bereft. The emotion drained her as nothing else could. The guard's arm propelled her into the main building just as the alarm sounded.
"It's probably nothing," he said. "The siren's been going off regularly with no explanation. A glitch. Or maybe it's the storm, but I have to go. You stay here, out of the rain.
He patted her arm in reassurance and took off. Lily stared out the window, oblivious to her rain-drenched body and soaked clothes, praying she'd done the right thing.
Ryland was gone, slipping away with his men. It was up to her to find a way to help them live in the world again. She had no idea how she was going to do such a thing. She had no idea if the water on her face was rain or tears.
She leaned her forehead onto the glass pane, staring sightlessly. How would the men survive in a world filled with raw emotion, with violence and pain? The overload of stimuli could send them into madness. It was insanity to think they would all make it to her estate without mishap. How would Ryland Miller survive without her to shield him from the rest of the world, even for a short period of time? It would be so easy for him to be separated from the others. He would send the weaker men with Caden and protect their backs. She knew that, accepted it. Ryland would guard the others before he would think of his own safety. It was that trait in him that appealed so strongly to her. If she'd left them in the laboratory, the men would have no hope of finding peace. They would be used, observed, treated eventually as lab rats, not humans. She'd already noticed the guards and techs were depersonalizing them. Colonel Higgins obviously wanted them dead, and she believed he was arranging accidents for them during testing. At least she could provide money enough to find a place to live in freedom, in seclusion maybe, but still living. They'd be safe, and both Peter Whitney and Ryland Miller had thought the risk was worth it. She had to be content with that. When the ferocity of the storm had eased, she headed for her car. The compound was in an uproar, guards scrambling in all directions, lights shockingly bright in the night as they swept continually along the shadows of buildings, seeking prey. The drizzle of rain couldn't mute the shocked shouts and blaring noises as the word spread that the Ghost Walkers had escaped. The cages were empty and the tigers were out. Fear spread like a disease. Lily could feel waves of it shimmering off the guards as they scurried around her. The post was on lockdown, and there was no way for her to leave. The emotions, running so high, were overwhelming. She could only hope Ryland and his men were safely away. As it was, her own barriers were flimsy, battered by the high levels of fear and adrenaline broadcast by the guards and technicians. She waited it out in her office, her hands over her ears to muffle the sound of the screaming sirens. She was glad when, after a time, the noise stopped abruptly. The sudden silence was a mercy to her throbbing head. Lily took a long shower in her private bathroom and put on a change of clothes she kept for the many nights she spent working. She wasn't surprised when two guards asked her to accompany them to the office of the president to meet with a military liaison and the executives of Donovan's. With a small sigh conveying her reluctance, she complied. She was drained physically and emotionally, and was desperate to hide from the world. Thomas Matherson, aide to Philip Thornton, was waiting to fill her in. General Ronald McIntyre happened to be here tonight visiting the compound. He called General Rainier, Colonel Higgins' direct commander, and insisted on being brought on board. The aide opened the door for her and gestured for her to precede him. Lily couldn't believe her good fortune. A general who had no knowledge of the experiment, if she could find a way to talk to him alone, she could tell him her suspicions about Colonel Higgins. The terrible knots in her stomach began to ease. The large room was dominated by the enormous round table. Every chair was filled and all heads swung to look at her. Most of the men half rose when she entered, but she waved them to their seats. "Gentlemen," she spoke softly, her voice filled with her usual confidence. She knew her expression was absolutely serene. She'd practiced it often enough. It was a measure of his upset that Philip Thornton performed the introductions himself. He nearly always left what he considered menial tasks to his assistant, Dr. Whitney has just agreed to take over where her father left off. She's been siphoning through his data, trying to make sense of it for us. Barely acknowledging the introduction, the general glared at Lily.
Dr. Whitney, fill me in on this experiment.
It was an order, sharp and clear, the general's eyes betraying his anger.
How much do you know?
Lily was cautious. She wanted to be careful, feel her way with him, to stall, to give the men time to find their escape routes and use them. Surreptitiously, she glanced at Colonel Higgins, raising an eyebrow in inquiry. His nod was slight, almost imperceptible, giving approval.
Let's say I know nothing.
Matherson pulled out a chair for Lily, close to the general, and across from Philip Thornton. With a grateful smile to the aide, she took her time seating herself.
I trust that everyone in this room has the proper security clearance?
Of course, snapped the general. Fill me in on these men.
Lily's gaze settled on his face.
The men were drawn from all branches of the service. Dr. Whitney, my father, was looking for a particular type of man. Green Berets, Navy SEALs, Special Forces, Rangers, men highly skilled and able to endure difficult circumstances. I believe he pulled men from the ranks of law enforcement also. He wanted men of superior intelligence and officers who had come up through the ranks. He wanted men who could think for themselves if the situation demanded it. Each of the men had to test high for a predisposition for psychic ability.
The general's eyebrow shot up. He glared at Colonel Higgins.
You knew about this nonsense and you approved it? You and General Rainier?
Higgins nodded.
The entire experiment was approved from the beginning, and it had merit.
There was a small silence while the general seemed to take it in. He turned back to Lily.
And how would they test them for psychic ability?
Lily looked at Higgins as if for help. When none was forthcoming, she shrugged.
The screening part was easy enough. Dr. Whitney, my father, that is, developed a questionnaire that highlighted the tendencies toward the clairvoyant.
Such as? General McIntyre prompted.
The ability to remember and interpret dreams. Frequent déjà vu, the sudden urge to call a friend just when he's in trouble. Even the tendency to accept the idea of clairvoyance because it feels right, is positively associated with the talent.
The general snorted.
Utter nonsense. We dropped those programs years ago. There's no such thing. You took good men and brainwashed them into thinking they were superior to the rest of us.
Lily tried to be patient, wanting the general to understand the enormity of what had been done to his men.
Of course, there's a lot more we don't understand about the neurobiochemistry of clairvoyance than we actually know, but recent advances in neural behavior psychology have strengthened some hypotheses. We know, for instance, that the capacity for clairvoyance is genetically determined. We all have heard of a few individuals doing remarkable feats in the paranormal sphere. These are psychic geniuses.
Lily groped for a way to make him understand.
Like an Einstein in physics or a Beethoven in music. Do you understand?
I'm following you, the general said grimly.
We know that most master physicists are not geniuses, nor are most concert-level musicians child prodigies. My father put together a program to screen potential candidates for an aptitude for clairvoyance. Then he developed a program to train and enhance their potential. Think of a bodybuilder. He's a result of genetic potential, strict training, and...
She trailed off, hastily censoring the probably designer drugs. The less they got into that part, the better. She had no intention of being specific with any of these men, least of all Philip Thornton and Colonel Higgins. Her father had been meticulous about not allowing his formula to fall into anyone's hands. She wasn't going to give it away to the very crowd she suspected of his murder. The general heaved a soft sigh and sank into the chair behind the desk. Rubbing his temples, he looked at her.
This is beginning to sound too plausible.
How did he get it to actually work? They've tried this type of thing in every country for years and had nothing but failures.
Dr. Whitney used more than one route.
She tapped her foot, trying to think of a way to explain in layman's terms.
Every object above 273 degrees Celsius or 0 degrees Kelvin emits energy. Biological organisms tend to focus on certain frequencies while screening other frequencies out. That requires energy.
When the general frowned, Lily leaned toward him.
Think of a refrigerator. One often doesn't even notice the motor is running until it shuts off. Then, suddenly, it's a relief. These filters are guided by the autonomic nervous system and commonly thought to be out of conscious control. Am I making sense to you?
When he nodded, she continued.
However, there are several examples of stunning control of the autonomic nervous system. Biofeedback techniques can lower heart rate, blood pressure, and body temperature. Zen masters and yogis are legendary. Even prolonged sexual performance by males is an example of somatic intervention over the autonomic nervous system.
The general had a scowl back on his face.
The point is that the energy that is important to paranormals is usually filtered to pathetic levels in adult humans, and these filters are under autonomic control. Dr. Whitney found a way to decrease the filtering system using mind-body control techniques taught by the Zen masters.
The general rubbed his hand over his face, shaking his head.
Why am I beginning to believe you?
Lily stayed silent, willing him to understand, wanting him on the side of the men. She thought of Ryland and the others out there in the storm. She sent up a silent prayer that they were all safe.
Please, continue, Dr. Whitney.
The general began to tap a pencil on the desk in agitation.
Using PET scans of working clairvoyance, my father found that the areas in the brain most important for clairvoyance were the same areas responsible for autism, the hippocampus, the amygdala, and the neocerebellum. He found other links as well. There's a higher level of psychic ability in autistics in comparison to the general population. Moreover, autistics are on sensory overload. They probably have a filtering defect. Reducing the filters, then, just gives you noise, like an untuned radio. You don't produce psychics, just autistics.
So there were problems, I take it.
Lily sighed with regret.
Yes, he encountered problems. At first, the men were housed in regular barracks together to promote unity. The idea was to form an elite unit that could use their combined skills for certain high-risk jobs. The unit was given field training as well as lab training. They went far beyond anyone's expectations. Most of them proved capable of telepathy on some level.
Elaborate for me.
They had the capability of speaking together without speaking aloud, sending thoughts to one another, for lack of a better way to explain. Dr. Whitney hooked them up to the scans, and the actual brain activity was unbelievable. Some of them had to be in the same room to communicate that way, while others could be completely across the compound.
Lily glanced again at Colonel Higgins.
You can see how such a talent would be useful on a mission. Others were also able to hear thoughts of people in the room with them. The variety of skills is documented, sir, videotaped and recorded if you care to see for yourself. Some of the men were able to hold objects and read them. The talents were varied. Psychometry, levitation, telekinesis, telepathy. Some only had one. Others tested strengths in several to varying degrees.
Lily took a deep breath, let it out slowly.
The problems that were encountered weren't foreseen, and Dr. Whitney couldn't solve them.
There was real regret in her voice. Lily cupped her hands around the warmth of the teacup that Matherson had placed in front of her.
There's a reaction called tachyphylaxis. The body senses too much action at the receptor and down-regulates them. Suddenly, the radio is nothing but static again. There were some who experienced unrelenting seizures from hyperstimulation. One went insane. Autistic, really. One other died of cerebral hypoxia, or intracranial bleed, from head injuries.
That wasn't exactly the truth. She felt there was another explanation for the intracranial bleed, but wasn't going to venture a hypothesis. My God, the general shook his head. Higgins cleared his throat. There were psychotic breaks, sir. Two became violent, uncontrollable. Even the others couldn't help them.
Guilt ate at Lily's insides, churning her stomach. As soon as Dr. Whitney realized what the problem was, he attempted to create a calming atmosphere that was soundproof, a place that could insulate the men from the constant torment of people around them. He regulated the atmosphere, used lighting and soothing natural sounds to relieve the continual assault on the brain.
Can these men really give suggestions to others and force obedience? General McIntyre demanded. Could these men have given your father some kind of post-hypnotic suggestion? His car was found down by the docks, and there's been some speculation that he's at the bottom of the sea.
Lily gasped. Are you implying these men had something to do with my father's disappearance? He was the only one capable of helping them.
Maybe not, Dr. Whitney. Maybe you are, Colonel Higgins pointed out. It could be that Ryland Miller figured that out. He heard your answer when I made the mistake of asking you in front of him if you could read your father's code. A shiver shook her frame as certain knowledge blossomed. The moment she'd answered in the affirmative, she had sentenced her father to death. She remembered how Higgins had suddenly changed, how he had ceased arguing with her father and looked at her with speculation instead of hostility.
"I'm sorry this is necessary, Lily," Philip Thornton said. "I know you're grieving and you've been up long hours trying to figure this out for us."
Lily forced a smile and waved his concern aside.
"I don't mind doing what I can to help, Philip. This is, after all, my company, too."
She owned a large block of shares and wanted to remind him of the fact.
"Have you any idea how this could have happened?" "I spoke with Captain Miller at great length this morning. He appeared quite cooperative, and even was considering the possibility that one of the side effects of the experiment might be paranoia." "He spoke so highly of Colonel Higgins, then would suddenly become hostile toward him. I pointed that out to him, and he definitely was considering the possibility. He has a quick, logical mind."
"He did ask to see me," Colonel Higgins admitted. "I went to speak with him, and he did say something along those lines." He rubbed his forehead. "The cage was securely locked when I left that room. The cameras will bear me out on that."
"The cameras were on the Blitz again," Thornton said. There was a sudden hush in the room. All eyes were on Colonel Higgins.
He sat back in his chair, glaring at them. "I'm telling you the cage was locked. I wouldn't have unlocked it with or without an armed guard present. In my opinion, Captain Miller is a dangerous man. With his team, he's nearly invincible. We're going to have to send everyone we have against him." "I hope you're not implying that we should terminate these men."
The general stared hard at Higgins.
"We may have no choice," Colonel Higgins replied.
"Excuse me, gentlemen," Lily interrupted. "There's always a choice. You can't abandon these men because they did something in desperation. They were under tremendous strain. I think we need to step back from this situation and try to figure out how we can help them." "Dr. Whitney, do you have any idea how long they'll be able to survive without insulation from the noise and emotions of people around them?" Philip Thornton asked. "Are we sitting on a time bomb?"
Lily shook her head.
"I don't honestly know."
"What will happen if these men turn violent?" the general asked. He was twisting a pencil in his fingers. He tapped the lead on the table, the pad of his thumb striking the eraser as if that would somehow stop what he was hearing. "Is that a possibility?" He looked around the faces at the table. "Is that a viable possibility?"
Lily twisted her fingers together tightly. "Unfortunately, these men are highly skilled in combat conditions. They've had every advantage the military could give them through special training. There was an incident the first year of field training involving one of the men. I viewed the training tape."
She took a cautious sip of tea. "I don't think I'm going to like what I'm going to hear," General McIntyre said. One of the trainees became disoriented during a mission in Colombia, and along with the targets, he went after some of the innocent populace. When Captain Miller attempted to restrain him, the trainee turned on Miller. The captain was given no choice but to defend his own life and protect the other members of his team. They were friends, close friends, and he was forced to kill.
She'd watched the attack on the film, and it had been gory and grim. Even worse had been the tapes of Ryland Miller afterward. Although she was watching film, she could almost absorb his emotions. The guilt, the frustration, the anger. He had been despondent, hopeless.
"You have to understand, sir, paranormals are subject to and respond to different stimuli than we can sense. They live in the same world, but in a different dimension, really. So the line we draw between clairvoyant and insane is very thin and sometimes non-existent. These men are unlike any soldiers you've ever trained. You have no idea what they're capable of."
Lily took another sip of tea, savored the warmth as it settled in her stomach. The general couldn't conceive of the power the men wielded, but she knew. "Why would they want to leave if they knew the risks in leaving?" The general scowled at them all, his eyes raking the room. What conditions were they living in? The implication of abuse was there, and Lily fought down the urge to blurt out the entire story to him. How the men were isolated, even from one another, cut off from their command, studied like animals in cages, subjected to continual tests. The pencil between the general's fingers snapped in his fingers, one end sailing toward Lily, the other still in his hand. Lily caught the end of the pencil before it rolled off the table, her thumb sliding over the eraser, automatically absorbing the textures, absorbing the heavy emotions. She stiffened, her gaze sliding to touch the general, then away. She wasn't telling him anything he didn't already know. He was tamping down his fury that Ryland Miller and his team had escaped. There was money to be had. Ryland stood in the way. The emotions swirled together, a mixture of violence and impatience over a thwarted plan. General McIntyre was up to his bushy eyebrows in deceit and treachery. Lily folded her hands carefully on the table, looking as serene and confident as she could when she wanted to leap at McIntyre and brand him a traitor to his country and demand what he knew of her father's death. "The living conditions, Colonel Higgins. Why would these men feel they needed to escape?"
"They were isolated from one another," Lily forced her voice to work.
"For their own good," Higgins snapped. "They were growing too powerful together. They could do things we didn't expect. Not even your father expected their combined powers to be what they were."
"That was no excuse for forgetting dignity, Colonel. They're human beings, men who were giving service to their country, not lab rats."
Lily objected coolly. "Your father was solely in charge of this experiment," Colonel Higgins shot back. "He's responsible for the results."
"As far as I can ascertain," Lily said calmly, "my father, Dr. Peter Whitney, conducted the experiment in good faith. When it had become apparent it was harming the men, he immediately called a halt to enhancing the rare talents, immediately trying to find ways to help them cope with the repercussions. He sought ways to make the men more comfortable. Unfortunately, no one listened to him. I read your direct orders, Colonel Higgins, and Philip Thornton signed those orders, insisting the men continue. On your say-so, Colonel, Captain Miller ordered his men to follow your command, and he and his men did so. Your orders, sir, were to continue training under a variety of conditions, and the men, being who and what they are, followed orders despite knowing they were deteriorating rapidly, their control unraveling even as they grew in power and ability. It's well documented that my father objected, that he laid out the repercussions, and that when you ordered the men to be isolated from one another, he told you they would have a much more difficult time. You ignored everything he said. And you have the results of your own foolish decisions."
"Your father refused to provide me with the data I needed." Colonel Higgins turned bright red, he was so angry. "He wanted to reverse the process and throw out everything because of one or two acceptable losses."
"My father tried to find a way to restore filters and deactivate the part of the brain he had stimulated.
He could not.
And there were no acceptable losses, Colonel. We're talking about human life.
Philip Thornton held up his hand. This is a discussion best left for later when we all have cooler heads and more sleep. Right now, we have to find a way to contain this situation. Dr. Whitney, you've given us quite a bit of information, but we really need to know exactly what was done to these men. We have access to some of the greatest minds in the world to help us. If we knew exactly what your father did and how he did it, Thornton pointed out. Can you explain it step by step to us?
I'm sorry, sir, I can't. I can't find his original data. It wasn't in his office, here, or at home. I tried both computers, and I'm going over his reports now to see if I can spot anything that will help me to figure it out.
Lily allowed her extreme fatigue to show, pushing her hands through her hair.
I've given you all the information I know at this time, but I'll continue looking.
Higgins snorted his disgust. The general shoved his coffee cup across the table, splashing dark liquid onto the highly polished surface. Who knows about this? The general continued, glaring at those in the room.
It's classified, only a few people, Colonel Higgins answered. Aside from those of us in this room, General Rainier and the techs here at the lab.
Keep it that way. We need to contain this and mop it up as soon as possible. How the hell could this happen? Can any of you tell me that? With all the security, how could they have pulled this off?
There was a small silence. Again, it was Higgins who responded.
We believe they've been testing the security, setting off the alarms, shutting down the cameras, and manipulating the guards, practicing for the last couple of weeks.
The general exploded with rage, his hands curling into two tight fists.
What do you mean, manipulating the guards?
He roared, his face so red Lily feared he might have a stroke.
I've already explained it, sir. It's part of their standard training, she explained patiently, planting a suggestion to look the other way. Very useful when infiltrating enemy and terrorist camps and in hostage situations. They're capable of unbelievable feats. They use their minds to coerce the enemy without the enemy knowing.
And these men are out there somewhere right now, walking time bombs? Men who very well could become mercenaries or worse? Who could go over to the other side?
Lily lifted her chin at the man.
These men were chosen for their loyalty, their patriotism. I can assure you, sir, they will never betray their country.
Their loyalty became a question the minute they became deserters, Dr. Whitney, and make no mistake, that is just what they are. Deserters.
Chapter 8. The wind tore through the trees, bending trunks nearly double, sweeping branches along the ground. The chain-link fence loomed, and Ryland leapt up, catching the links, scrambling up and over in one smooth move, landing on his feet in a crouch. He remained low to the ground and silently signaled to the man on his left.
Last man clear.
Raoul Gator Fontenot dropped to his belly and scooted along the ground toward the sound of the baying dogs. Telepathy was one of his weakest talents, but he could tune in to animals. It was his job to direct the guard dogs away from the other members of his team. Knife in his teeth, he moved through the grass along the fence line, willing the lightning to stay in the clouds. Too many guards were swarming along their escape route, and even with Ryland's tremendous control, to manipulate all of them was an impossibility. It took a collective effort and, through necessity, they were scattered. Waves of fear and aggression poured from the guards, compounding the danger to the team. All of them were feeling ill from the tremendous energy being generated.
Coming up on you now, Gator.
Gator glanced back toward Ryland, caught the swirl of his fingers and nodded in understanding. He transferred the knife to his right hand, blade flat along his wrist to hide the telltale glint of steel, and dropped all the way down on his belly, breathing softly, inaudibly, willing himself to be a part of the earth. The dogs were eager,
rushing toward the fence, toward his comrades. The enormity of his task shook him for a moment. He had to lie there in plain sight, trusting his captain to keep the guards looking the other way while he directed the dogs to a false trail. One slip up, and they were all dead. The rain beat down on him, a steady assault. The wind howled and moaned as if alive and protesting the unnaturalness of what they were doing, of what they were.
Captain, it was the best he could do with his lack of telepathy, a one-word protest against having the lives of so many in his hands. This is a piece of cake for you, Gator. A pack of hounds, dogging our heels, nothing to you.
That was Captain Miller coming through. Gator's stomach settled a bit.
Walk in the park?
Caden threw in his 2 cents, laughter in his voice, as if he were enjoying the adrenaline rush after their forced confinement. Gator found himself smiling at the thought of Caden loose on the world. At once he felt the movement of the others, and knew Ryland was so tuned in to him that he was already directing the rest of the team forward. The men would be ghosts moving through the storm, but he couldn't worry about them, and he couldn't worry about being seen or captured. Gator put his fate in the hands of his team leader and narrowed his world to the approaching dogs. Ryland strained to pierce the dark veil of the rain-swept night, watching for the guards and dogs as their pursuers neared the fence. He trusted Caden to keep the other men moving. His job was to protect Gator and the 2 men behind him. Ryland was worried about Jeff Hollister. Hollister was in bad shape, but game enough, struggling not to slow the team. He'd barely made it over the high chain-link fence with help from Gator and Ian McGillicuddy. McGillicuddy lay beside Hollister, somewhere behind Ryland, holding position to protect the weakest member of his team. The dogs were acting frenzied now, picking up the scents, rushing towards them. Almost abruptly, they stopped, sniffed the ground, turned in circles, not obeying their handlers to move forward. One large shepherd took the lead, swinging south, away from the escaped prisoners. The other dogs rushed to follow, baying loudly. Gator pressed his throbbing forehead into the soft, wet earth in an effort to alleviate the pain brought on by such intense concentration and use of energy. The fear emanating from the guards was like a disease spreading and infecting everyone it came in contact with. The guards had been told the men were dangerous killers, and all of them were extremely nervous.
Mass hysteria. Ryland's voice was soothing in Gator's pounding head. I know you're all comfortable there, but don't go to sleep.
Gator rolled toward Ryland, judging his position and working his way back as soundlessly as he could. The misdirection of the dogs wouldn't hold for long, but it gave them a few more precious minutes to cover their tracks and get to safety. Ryland reached out and touched Gator to let him know his tremendous effort was appreciated. They began inching their way forward across the open meadow, flanking Hollister and McGillicuddy.
Clear,
Caden reported his group had made it to the other side of the meadow without incident.
Take them forward, we're right behind you. Gator cleared our back trail, but it isn't going to last.
Ryland was uneasy. He glanced toward Jeff Hollister. The man's face was etched with pain. Even with the black swirling clouds and vicious rain, the darkness of the night, he could see the lines there. Cursing Peter Whitney silently, he slowed the pace even more. The agony in Jeff's head radiated out of him to touch every member of the team. Jeff needed the medication Ryland had ordered them not to take, fearing it was too dangerous. Now he wondered if he had given Hollister a death sentence with that order.
Hang in there, Jeff. You're almost there. I've got meds lined up to help you out.
I'm slowing you down.
Don't communicate. Ryland protested sharply. You can't afford the effort.
Ryland feared Jeff would have a seizure if the assault on his brain continued.
Unease was growing in him. Fear for his men, the sudden chilling premonition of danger. Ian?
Ian McGillicuddy was a human antenna for trouble. He could sense danger coming.
Oh, yeah.
We've got trouble. It's coming fast.
Ryland scuttled forward on his belly, angling once again toward Gator.
Move it, Jeff. Get him up, Ian. Run flat out toward the cars. Wait no more than 5 minutes and then get Jeff clear.
We're not leaving you behind.
Jeff's voice was unsteady, harsh with pain. Ryland's heart swelled with pride. Even as ill as Jeff Hollister was, he put the members of the team first.
That's an order, Jeff. You and McGillicuddy clear out in 5 minutes.
Ryland felt it then, the burst of malignant energy pouring over him. Instinctively, he rolled to protect Gator, covering the man's back even as he faced upward. His hands met the solid bulk of flesh and blood. He didn't see the knife so much as he felt it as it came swiftly toward him. It was reflex and training that saved him, his hand closing solidly around his assailant's wrist to control the weapon. Recognition crowded in. Russell Cowlings had come out of the night and attacked them. Ryland rolled away from Gator, taking the heavier man with him. Planting his foot squarely in Cowlings' chest, Ryland launched the man over his head. Cowlings landed with a soft thud, rolled, and came up in a half-crouch. Ryland leapt to his feet, his hand slapping away the darting knife as the man came at him a second time. They circled each other cautiously.
Why, Russell? Why would you betray us?
You call it betrayal? I call you deserters.
Cowlings feinted another attack, threw himself forward when Ryland stepped to the side, going in low and mean, blade up to do the most damage to the soft parts of the body. Ryland felt the tip of the knife slice his heavy shirt, belly level. He was already whirling around, catching Cowling's wrist and taking him down so that Cowling's legs flew up and he landed hard. Countermoving, Cowlings turned his wrist to get control of the blade of the knife. He yelled as he did so, calling out to the security guards for help.
Go, Gator. Get clear, Ryland ordered, as he locked Cowling's arm, pointing his little finger back behind him so the man's body followed.
Cowlings was forced to drop the knife or allow his hand to be broken. The knife dropped to the ground, and Ryland kicked it hard, sending the weapon spinning some distance away into the taller grass.
Man down. Jeff is down. He's having a seizure.
Ian McGillicuddy reported in his usual calm voice.
Gator, go, Ryland repeated. Help Ian get Jeff out.
Cowlings tried to lash out with his legs, scissor-kicking in an attempt to bring Ryland down.
Yeah, send him away, Cowlings spat. It won't matter. You know they'll all die.
Ryland moved to the side, planting a vicious back kick squarely on Cowlings' thigh.
Is that what Higgins told you? Is that why you sold us out, Russ? Did Higgins convince you we were going to die?
Cowlings swore and spat on the ground. He turned his head to glare up at Ryland.
You're just so bullheaded, Rye. What's wrong with using our skills to make money? Do you know what Peter Whitney is worth? What that daughter of his is worth? Why should they get all the money while we take all the risks? The employees at Donovan's make more money than we do.
Cowlings came in fast, smashing two hard jabs at Ryland's jaw. Both punches were blocked, and Ryland retaliated with a body blow going straight up toward the throat. Cowlings managed to reel backward, barely escaping the lethal attack. Ryland was aware of the dogs again, the sounds of excited voices getting closer.
This is about money, then, is it? It's about your greed, Cowlings, not death, Ryland snapped. You aren't afraid of dying, are you? Why is that? Did Higgins give us all something to cause these seizures?
Cowlings laughed.
They're all gonna die, Miller. Every last one of them. You can't save them. And then who's going to be valuable?
Higgins will need me.
You're dancing with the devil, Russ. You think the Colonel is acting in the best interest of our country?
He's selling us out.
He's smart enough to see that money can be made. You're in the way, Miller. You were from the start with your Boy Scout attitude. Hell, we tried twice to kill you, and you just won't die.
Higgins will get rid of you the minute he doesn't need you.
The sound of the dogs was getting closer. Someone had heard Cowling's yell and had turned the pack around.
He'll always need me. I can tell him things no one else can. He knows it, and he's not going to kill the golden goose.
Ryland moved in fast, using the speed he was known for, a blurring motion of hands and feet, driving Cowlings backward. He didn't feel any of the blows Cowlings managed to land, his adrenaline protecting him. His world had narrowed, focused on his opponent. There were few who could defeat him in hand-to-hand combat. Ryland was in a life-or-death battle. Russell Cowlings wanted him dead. Cowlings grunted as Ryland landed a round kick to his ribs, smashing into bone. The air whistled out of his lungs and he dropped like a stone, fighting for breath. The security guards and the pack of dogs were already too close, coming toward Ryland at a dead run, with only the fence separating them. Ryland kicked Cowlings hard in the head, hoping to knock him out. He spun around and sprinted across the open meadow, away from Gator, Hollister, and McGillicuddy. Ryland's boots slapped the mud hard, making noise, drawing the attention of the dogs. The animals bayed wildly, dragging at their leashes until their handlers allowed them to slip free. At once, the dogs ran to the chain-link fence and began tearing at it in a frenzy. Some dogs tried to leap it, others to climb, still others to dig. Small circles of light danced and wavered in the sheets of rain, the guards' vain attempt to illuminate the area. Ryland zigzagged across the grass, making more noise, so that the guards might hear him even over the loud barking of the dogs. It took a moment for the men to react, but they did as he wanted, running along the fence toward his position and away from his men. As long as they were running parallel with him, no one thought to stop and cut the fence to let the dogs through. It gave Ryland a few more precious minutes to cover more ground, so his men had time to get their downed comrade clear. He was grateful for the strong winds and pouring rain, for the thunder and lightning rocking the skies. It would be a while before a helicopter would be put up in the stormy skies in an attempt to track them. His men would be safely away in the cars Lily had waiting for them. Her security man, Arlie, had left the various cars parked at different points at least 2 miles from the laboratories. Ryland heard the warning rattle of the fence and turned away from it, sprinting toward the nearest group of buildings. One of the guards snipped the fence, widened the opening to allow the dogs to pour through. They rushed in a pack toward Ryland, eager to hunt their prey. The guards followed, ducking through the fence in hot pursuit. Ryland's boots smacked the pavement loudly as he raced across the street and leapt up on top of a parked sedan. He jumped, his fingers catching hold on the edge of the eaves of the storefront. It was a poorer section of town, and the buildings were old and run down, but the wood held up as he dragged himself onto the roof.
"We're clear,"
Ian indicated. They had located one of the cars and were safely away.
"We can circle around and pick you up."
"Jeff?" Ryland wanted medical care for the man as soon as possible. There was no telling what was going on in the overstimulated brain. He raced across the roof and leapt to the covering of the next building. It was slick from the rain, and he slid precariously, fell on his backside, just as a barrage of bullets whistled by him.
"He needs medical attention. Give us your position."
Ryland crawled across the roof, not taking a chance on skylining himself with trigger-happy guards. If Cowlings was telling the truth, and he'd already been a target twice, chances were good the guards had been ordered to shoot to kill. The roof had a door, leading to a small stairwell.
"I'll make it to you. Stay in position. Shots have been fired. Stay out of the area."
The door was locked. Ryland didn't waste time. He simply crawled to the far side of the building and peered over into the street. There was a small overhang to shade the entrance to a store. Ryland dropped onto it, fought for a purchase in the rain-soaked wood, slid a few inches before he caught himself. From there, he jumped to the sidewalk. The landing was hard, jarring him. There was an alley a few feet to his right, but he didn't trust that it would bring him to the street he needed. He forced air into his body, slowed his breathing, and melted into the shadow of the building. There was only the sound of the rain as it poured from the skies.
the roar of the wind as it showed its fury. Clouds boiled overhead, black cauldrons of spinning dark, angry threads, spawning veins of lightning arcing from cloud to cloud. Ryland's luck held, and the lightning didn't flash close to him, allowing him to slip silently through the street to the corner where the car was waiting with the motor running and the passenger door open. He leapt into the seat, slamming the door closed as Gator took off so fast they fishtailed in the rain-soaked road. Ryland turned to look at Jeff, lying so quiet and pale on the back seat.
"Is he alert?" Ian shook his head. "He's been down since the seizure.
Gator and I carried him to the car, but we couldn't bring him around."
"I hope the lady doctor knows what she's doing, or we're going to lose him."
There was silence in the car. Too many had been lost already. None of them knew if it was inevitable or not. Lily stared out the window as the limousine glided through the rain-wet streets. She'd left her little car in the parking lot and was thankful that John had come to get her.
Where was Ryland? Had he made it to the house yet?
She felt almost numb with terror for him. She didn't expect to feel this way. She couldn't think of her father or the conspiracy. She couldn't think about the other men somewhere out in the ferocious storm fighting their way to freedom. She could only think of him. Ryland Miller. She ached for him. She closed her eyes and he was there, behind her eyelids, sharing her skin. It was revolting and juvenile and illogical, but none of that mattered. She couldn't force her thoughts away from him. She had to know if he was alive or dead, if he was injured. It frightened her how strong her need was to see him, to touch him, to hear the sound of his voice. She didn't dare reach out to him telepathically, not when the stakes were so high and his total concentration was needed where he was. The garage door opened smoothly, and the limousine rolled into the huge garage. To her relief, there were several other cars parked in the garage. For a moment, she laid her head against the headrest and let her breath out slowly. The limousine halted and her chauffeur turned off the motor.
"John, thanks for coming to get me in this awful storm. I'm sorry for dragging you out, but I was so tired, and I didn't want to stay at Donovan's overnight."
Nothing could have induced her to stay at the laboratories now that Ryland was no longer there. It was strange, almost terrifying, how bereft she felt.
"I'm glad you called me, Miss Lily. We were all worried about you. Why were there so many guards poking through the car? They've never done that before."
The chauffeur turned to look at her with a raised eyebrow, but he refrained from saying a single word about the disappearance and reappearance of storm-drenched cars in their garage.
"I'm sorry, John. It's a classified thing to do with the military."
She slid from the car, swaying with weariness. She could hear the wind howling at the doors of the garage, and she shivered.
What a ghastly night!
He glared at her as he opened the driver's side door.
"You didn't eat today, did you? Not a single thing."
Lily leaned over and kissed the top of his head.
"Stop worrying so much about me, John. I'm a sturdy woman, not a delicate waif. I have a feeling I'll always worry about you, Lily. This thing with your father, I'm damnably sorry."
John shook his head.
"I thought he might be found, but he'd never stay away from you this long. And if it was a kidnap for ransom or even secrets of some kind, we would have heard."
Lily could see the lines of age in his face, the tinge of gray to his coloring. She put her hand on his arm.
"I know how much you loved him, John. I'm sorry for both of us."
His sorrow was beating at her, profound and deep, slashing at her unprotected mind. Lily closed her eyes for a moment, worried about Ryland Miller and his men. She wanted to check with Arlie and make certain they'd arrived and were safe within the thick walls of her home. Compassion welled up as she studied her chauffeur. John suddenly appeared fragile and looked his age,
It caught her by surprise. She didn't want to lose John.
He was my friend, Lily, my family. I knew your father when he was a boy. My father worked for his family. I think I was his only friend growing up in that house. His life was hell in that house. His parents and grandparents had been carrying on some sort of experiment to have a child of great intelligence. He was unloved, merely a product of breeding the right genes. His parents never talked to him unless it was to insist on his studying. He wasn't allowed to play sports or play with toys or even associate with other kids. They wanted a highly developed brain, and everything he did, even as a child, was to that end. And when you, he hesitated, came along, he improvised. Peter vowed he wouldn't be like his parents. I talked to him many times about his absent-mindedness. I know it hurts you when he couldn't remember your important events. He shook his head sadly. He did love you, Lily. For all his strange ways, he did love you very much.
But Peter Whitney had been like his parents, exactly like his parents. He had followed in their footsteps until something had opened his eyes. Lily put her arms around John as he got out of the car, hugging him.
Does everyone in the household know I'm not his biological daughter?
John Brimslow stiffened, jerked back to glare down at her.
Who told you that?
He did, she said, in a letter.
He passed his hand over his face, then gripped her arms.
You were everything to Peter.
He cleared his throat.
And to me, to all of us. You brought sunshine to us, Lily. Rosa could never have children. Arlie dated a multitude of women, but he never could tolerate anyone's company but his own for very long. We're a family of misfits, Lily. You've always known about me. I never hid who I am from you. We built the family around you.
Lily smiled at him, grateful for his words.
John, do you know how my father came to adopt me?
John shifted uncomfortably.
Your father went overseas. Some people might say he bought you, Lily. I don't know how much money was involved, but does that matter now? You didn't have a family, and neither did we.
They walked together through the entrance hall, leading from the garage to the house. Lily's hand tucked in the crook of John's arm as he continued.
Rosa was young back then. She barely spoke English. But she was a nurse and needed a job to stay in the country. Peter snapped her up as your nanny, and eventually she ran the house for us.
He grinned at her.
She frowned on my lifestyle at first. I'd already met Harold by then, and we were life partners. Peter never judged me, but Rosa was afraid I would somehow damage you with my perversions.
John,
Lily protested.
She's never, ever indicated in any way by word or action that she disapproved of you. Rosa speaks very highly and affectionately of you.
That was in the old days when you were just a little thing. She's come to accept me, and she nursed Harold devotedly at the end. I don't know what I would have done without her.
He patted her hand.
Or you, Lily. I'll never forget you standing next to me at the gravesite with your arm around my waist and sobbing right along with me.
I loved Harold, John. He was as much a part of our family as you and Rosa and Arlie. I still miss him. And I know you do, too.
She stopped walking just outside the kitchen where she knew Rosa was waiting for her.
Have you had a physical recently? I want you to rest and take very good care of yourself. I can't afford to lose anyone else in my family.
He lifted her chin and brushed a kiss over the top of her head.
I'd like you to remember how important you are to us, Lily. You have enough money and a beautiful home. You never have to work if you don't want to.
Don't get into whatever Peter was into. I know he was more distracted than usual those last few weeks.
Rosa burst through the kitchen door and flung her arms around Lily. To Lily's horror, she was sobbing.
I paged you over and over, Lily. Why didn't you call me? You didn't say you were going to be late, and when I called Donovan's, they wouldn't tell me anything except there had been trouble.
Lily held her close, astonished that the unflappable Rosa was so distressed over her being late.
I left my pager in my locker. I'm really sorry, Rosa. I should have called you. It was so thoughtless of me. The storm was so wild. I thought you must have had an accident.
Rosa clung to her, alternating between hugging and patting Lily's back.
Didn't Arlie tell you? I asked him to send John for me.
Lily looked up at her chauffeur for help. Rosa was prone to outbursts of temper, chasing people around her kitchen with tea towels. But she never wept as if her heart were breaking.
When the police didn't call about an accident, I was afraid someone had kidnapped you, oh, Lily.
She turned away from the younger woman and covered her face with her hands, sobbing uncontrollably. John put his arm around her, frowning as he did so.
Rosa, dear, you'll make yourself ill. Sit down. I'll make tea for you.
He helped her to the nearest chair. Rosa put her head down on the table and continued crying. John put on the kettle to boil water. Lily stood close to the older woman, puzzling over her behavior.
Rosa, I'm perfectly fine. Don't cry anymore. I promise I'll be better about calling you.
Rosa just shook her head. Lily sighed.
John, perhaps I could speak to Rosa alone. Do you mind?
John kissed the top of Rosa's head.
Don't make yourself sick. It's been a difficult time for all of us.
Lily waited until the kitchen door swung closed.
What is it, Rosa? Tell me.
Rosa continued to shake her head, refusing to look at Lily. Lily took the time to make the tea, first heating the small pot with a little water from the kettle, then discarding the water before measuring out the tea leaves and pouring on the boiling water to brew. The simple ritual cleared her mind and allowed it to work as it preferred, coming at the puzzle from various angles. She waited for the worst of the storm of tears to pass before placing a teacup in front of Rosa. All the time, her mind was working, putting together the fact that Rosa was a nurse and Peter Whitney had brought her into the country.
Does this have anything to do with the fact that you were my nurse when my father brought me here with all those other little girls?
She asked the question very softly, without inflection, not wanting to sound accusing. Rosa cried out and stared at Lily in shock. There was guilt in the depths of her eyes, guilt and sorrow and remorse.
I should never have agreed to do it. I had nowhere to go, Lily, and I loved you so much. I couldn't have children of my own. You have been my daughter.
Lily sat down abruptly.
Why didn't you ever tell me about my father, Rosa? Why didn't you tell me about that horrible room and all those other poor little girls?
Rosa looked around in fear.
Shh! Never speak of such things. No one can ever know about that room or those poor children. Dr. Whitney should never have told you. It was wrong. He came to see that, and he tried to find those girls good homes. What he did was evil, unnatural. His eyes were open when you were nearly killed.
Lily took a cautious sip of tea. Rosa obviously believed Lily's father had told her everything.
My leg, she said, as she set the cup in the saucer. I had so many nightmares, and Dad would never tell me. It was a terrible accident, Lily. Your father was devastated. He promised me he would never make you do anything like that again.
Rosa was whispering, obviously fearful of being overheard.
Did John know about the other girls? Did he know about the experiment?
Lily couldn't look at the woman who had raised her. Couldn't look at the tear-stained face, which plainly told her there was so much more she didn't want to hear.
Oh, no, Lily, Rosa protested. He would have beat Peter within an inch of his life, and then he would have quit. Peter needed John to keep him human. Your father had a few people he allowed into his world. John was a big part of that world. They were boyhood friends, and John never minded Peter's eccentric ways.
Lily was watching Rosa's face now.
Why are you so upset, Rosa? Tell me. All of this was a long time ago. I would never blame you for something my father did. You're a victim as much as I am.
I can't tell you, Lily. You'll never forgive me, and you're the only family I have. This is my home. John, Arlie, you, and your father are my entire world.
Lily reached across the table to take Rosa's hand.
I love you. Nothing can ever change that. I don't like to see you so upset like this.
Arlie told me someone broke into our house. He said they knew exactly where your office was and where your father's office was. He said they had the house codes.
Rosa stared miserably into her teacup. Lily allowed the breath to leave her lungs in a little rush. She remained silent, simply waiting. Her fingers tightened around Rosa's hand in reassurance.
They threatened me, Lily. They said they could make me leave the country. They said they could make a problem with my citizenship papers. They said I would never see you again.
Who told you that?
Two men stopped me as I was getting out of my car at the grocery store. They had badges and wore suits.
Rosa, you know you're independently well off, and my money is your money. Our lawyers would never allow anyone to send you away. You've lived in this country for years. You're a citizen, legally here. How could you think we would ever allow you to be taken away?
They said they would just take me off the street and send me away, and no one would ever know what happened to me. Then they said they would make you disappear, too. I should have told you, but I was so afraid. I thought Arlie would catch them, whether or not they had the codes. He has all those silly gadgets he loves so much.
Rosa had never paid attention to life outside the Whitney home. Coming from a poor background, coupled with the guilt she had always felt over her part in using little children in an experiment, had aided in keeping her segregated from the outside world.
Did you tell them about the laboratory?
Rosa squeaked in terror.
I never speak of that unholy place. I try to forget it exists. Your father should have destroyed it.
She raised her stricken gaze to Lily's.
I'm sorry, Lily. I copied some of your father's papers off his desk. I tried to give them things that didn't matter, but I didn't know what was important.
There is a traitor in our house.
Lily leaned over and kissed Rosa.
You have no idea what a relief it is to hear this. I knew someone in our home was supplying information, and I thought it was a matter of money or politics. These people can't touch you, Rosa.
Rosa was no traitor. Just a simple, frightened woman who had done her best to feed information of little consequence to those threatening her. The relief was overwhelming.
If they contact you again, let me know or tell Arlie.
I don't leave the house anymore, Lily. I have our groceries delivered. I don't want to see these men.
She leaned toward Lily, a fresh flood of tears swimming in her eyes.
What if they are the men who made your father disappear? I'm so ashamed of myself. I should have told Arlie, but I didn't want him to know I even spoke to those men. What if they take you away from me? I'm so afraid.
No one is going to harm me, Rosa. And if you ever disappeared, I would move heaven and earth to find you. I need to know a few other things about the time when my father first hired you.
Rosa shook her head and clambered to her feet, taking her teacup to the sink.
I don't speak of that time. I won't, Lily.
Lily followed her.
I'm sorry, Rosa, but it isn't just idle curiosity. There are other things going on, and I need to find a way to fix them. Please, help me.
Rosa crossed herself and turned toward Lily with a helpless sigh.
If we do evil, it will haunt us always. Your father did things that weren't natural, and I helped him. No matter what we do now, we have to pay for what we did then. That's all I'll say on this subject. Go to bed, Lily. You look so pale and tired.
Rosa, what did I do that brought me to Peter Whitney's attention in the first place? What set me apart from the others so much? There must have been others who could do the things I did.
Rosa hung her head.
The things he did were wrong, Lily. I've tried very hard to make up for helping him. I don't want to think about those times.
Please, Rosa, I need to know.
Even as an infant, you could make things fly in the air. If you wanted your milk and we were too slow, you could bring it to you. It is no good to think of these things. We have a good life, long past those times. Go to bed now and sleep.
Rosa kissed Lily and walked out of the kitchen, leaving Lily staring after her. Lily put her head down on the sink and growled in sheer frustration. Rosa had always been stubborn over the strangest things. Pressing her for more information was useless. Lily pushed away from the counter and made her way through the darkened house to the stairway. Lily wrinkled her nose when she saw Arlie waiting for her on the bottom stair. She should have known he'd be there. Her family had a tendency to hover.
I didn't think you'd ever get here. You left me in a mess, Lily.
Lily scowled at the annoyance and accusation in his tone.
Well, I've had a few little problems to deal with tonight, Arlie. I'm so sorry if you were inconvenienced and missed your beauty sleep.
You're in a foul mood tonight.
Did they make it?
Arlie stood up, towering over her.
Now you want to know. The trouble with women is they never have their priorities in place. If you give me any trouble tonight, Arlie, I swear I'm going to smash you one. I am not in the mood to pander to your overinflated ego, soothe your ruffled feathers, or listen to you expound on your pet peeves.
I always told your father you had such a penchant for violence.
Why couldn't you be one of those seen-and-never-heard children? Arlie groused. I made up my mind after the first 5 minutes in your company I was going to be the plague of your life.
Lily leaned her head against his chest wearily and looked up at him.
I am, aren't I, Arlie?
He kissed the top of her head, then ruffled her hair as if she were still a child.
Yes, Lily, you're definitely the biggest plague of my life.
He sighed. One of the men is in bad shape. They said he had a seizure, and all of them are worried about a brain bleed.
Her heart dropped to the floor. Her legs turned to rubber. She clutched at Arlie's sleeve. Who is it?
He shrugged, his gaze narrowing at her agitation registered.
I don't know. Someone they call Jeff. He's out like a light.
Lily breathed a prayer of thanks that it hadn't been Ryland. Take me to them, Arlie, and I'll need our medical kit.
Are you certain about this? If these men are caught here, we could get into a lot of trouble. Are you prepared for that?
Are you prepared for the alternative?
Chapter 9. Ryland met her at the door, his silver gaze devouring her face, taking in every shadow, noting how pale she was. Without preamble, he pulled her into his arms, needing her, needing to feel her against him, needing to run his hands over her body and assure himself she was unharmed.
Why the hell are you so late? Didn't you think I'd be worried about you? I didn't have the energy for wave communication.
He gave her a little shake. Lily rested against the hard strength of his body, grateful he was alive. His heart was reassuringly steady and his muscles were solid beneath her hands.
I was so worried about you, Ryland. I was held up at the laboratories. I had to talk with General McIntyre. He was there when the escape took place, and Higgins and Thornton asked me to join them in explaining everything. At that moment, she didn't care to reason out why it was so important to her that Ryland was safe. It only mattered that he was, that her world could continue, and she could breathe again. Lily found that her fingers were curled possessively in Ryland's hair. She had to touch him. She wanted to weep with relief.
Arlie tells me someone had seizures. I was so afraid for you.
She was revealing too much of her feelings, but she couldn't stop herself. Jeff Hollister, we haven't been able to wake him. He clasped both her hands in his, brought her fingers to the warmth of his mouth, all too aware he wasn't alone with her when he needed to be desperately.
Do you know whether he was given anything to sleep last night?
He was hurting bad. Telepathic communication is difficult at the best of times, and he was already worn down. I was trying to sustain the bridge myself for everyone, but I...
He trailed off, guilt riding him hard. He'd been selfish. He had wanted to dreamwalk, wanted to comfort Lily, be with Lily. In using up his energy that way, he'd been unable to provide as much for the others. Lily tightened her fingers around his.
Ryland, you aren't responsible for everyone. You're not.
There was too much compassion in her eyes. Lily could so easily turn him inside out. Just the way she looked at him made him feel different inside. He liked her. He liked being with her, hearing her voice, watching her expressions. She was burrowing into his heart. He could feel her there.
Sure he is.
The voice was deep and edged with humor. Lily whirled around to face Caden, ready to battle for Ryland. Caden was tall and thick with muscle and sinew, a man with cold eyes and the face of a Greek god, and he was grinning at her.
Just ask him. He thinks he's responsible for the entire world.
The flat black eyes swung to taunt Ryland.
And you're making a damn fool out of yourself looking at her all goofy that way. You're making the male gender look bad.
Ryland's eyebrow shot up. It's an impossibility for me to look goofy at anyone. He talks about you all the time, too.
We can't shut him up.
Do you make it a habit to sneak up on people?
Lily was trying not to laugh. He deliberately made her blush. She tried to control the faint color, but his hawk-like gaze had definitely spotted it. Arlie stared at her as if she'd grown two heads. She resisted the desire to kick him in the shins, struggling for serenity instead.
Yes, ma'am. Now that you mention it. I'd have to say that's one of my specialties.
Caden looked unrepentant. Lily rolled her eyes.
Where did you put Jeff Hollister? I'd like to take a look at him. And did any of you think to bring out those sleeping tablets so I can run an analysis on them?
She fell back on what she knew best. Science, logic, knowledge. Anything but men.
Close your mouth, geek boy, she hissed as she swept past Arlie with her head held high. You're catching flies.
Arlie stomped after her, hurrying to catch up. He leaned over to whisper overly loud in her ear,
We didn't raise you to be a little hussy.
Ryland saw her lips curve for just a moment, but she managed to keep a straight face, looking down her patrician nose at him.
I don't know what you thought you saw, but I've been meaning to tell you for some time to use the new insurance plan for glasses. Thick Coke bottle glasses might be helpful.
Oh, you'd like me to believe you weren't petting him like a favorite cat. My face turned red watching you. Where'd you learn to behave like that?
You know those movies you watch all the time, no one's supposed to know about?
Lily said sweetly.
You accidentally played them on the wrong channel. It's amazing the education one can receive.
Arlie kept pace beside her, not even breaking stride.
Do you even know his name? I'm going to tell Rosa.
Go ahead. I'll tell her about your movie collection.
Ryland laughed softly.
You two sound like bickering siblings.
She's always been jealous of my superior intellect, Arlie explained.
Lily tossed her head.
Huh. The only thing I've ever been jealous of is your skinny body.
Ryland pushed open the door to the injured man's room. Although Lily had had the room outfitted with blue lights, they'd been dimmed, and it was difficult to see Jeff Hollister at first, lying so still, his face pale and his hair platinum blonde. He looked like a wax statue. She heard the CD playing soft strains of music over the sound of the rain. Even with the thick walls of the house, this was needed to provide a soothing respite for the men.
"Jeff is from San Diego, California. He's a champion surfer," Ryland said, leaning down to pat the man's shoulder. "He talks like an idiot, mostly slang, but has a high IQ and degree from MIT. His family would be devastated if anything happened to him. His mother sends him cookies every month, and he gets letters from every brother and sister he has." Lily was watching the way Ryland's large hands, scarred from numerous fights, were so gentle on Jeff Hollister's shoulder. The lump in her throat grew. Ryland would be just as devastated as Jeff Hollister's family if she couldn't find a way to save him.
"You have to let me examine him. Rosa, my housekeeper, is a nurse, and if necessary, I can call in a doctor who would be discreet."
Arlie cleared his throat. "Lily, you can't bring Rosie in here. She can't know about this. She's strange."
"She's not strange," Lily defended immediately. "She just doesn't believe in experiments."
She frowned at Arlie. "I wasn't saying anything against her, hon," Arlie said, touching her shoulder in a brief gesture of solidarity. "You know the way Rosa always talked about her family. Very religious."
Lily leaned into him just for a moment, then bent to examine Hollister.
Ryland shook his head. "We can't chance bringing a doctor here. If he needs medical care beyond what you can give him, we'll take him elsewhere. I won't compromise your safety any more than we already have."
Lily glanced up at his face and noted the glint of steel in his eyes, the absolute resolve, the regret that flickered across his face and was gone.
"Fine. Who witnessed what happened to him?"
"That would be me, ma'am."
The voice came out of the darkest corner of the room and nearly made Lily jump out of her skin. She whirled around to see a large man stirring, slowly standing until it seemed a giant was in the room with her. He was tall and heavily muscled, with chestnut hair that gleamed red in the faint light from the lamp. She was shocked at how silent he was as he crossed the room to reach her side.
"Ian McGillicuddy, ma'am.
Remember me?"
How could she forget? She'd read his profile before going to see him, but nothing could prepare her for the sheer power radiating from him. His eyes were a dark brown, piercing and intelligent. He moved with a speed and silence that seemed impossible for such a big man.
"Yes, of course. I'm glad you're safe, Mr. McGillicuddy."
From somewhere in the darkness, there was a humorous snort at her formal use of his name. Lily realized the men were all keeping vigil over their fallen comrade.
"Call me Ian, ma'am. I don't want to have to give any of these boys a lesson in manners."
She looked up at him, at the amusement dancing in his dark eyes.
"No, I guess we can't have that. Call me Lily and I'll drop the mister. You want to describe everything you can remember about his condition?"
"He was very pale. Jeff was always outdoors, and he had a tan that never went away. We've been locked up, and I haven't seen him, but it was a shock to see him so white. He was sweating, and he felt clammy to me. He said his head felt like it was going to explode. He kept touching the back of his head when he said it. I could tell he was afraid, and Jeff is fearless. He's one of those kamikaze types that just goes for broke."
"Did he say whether or not he took a sleeping pill?"
Ian shook his head.
"No, but he said he just wanted to sleep to escape the pain, and dreaming of sand surfing home was better than knowing you were dying of a brain bleed.
He was worried about slowing us down, and kept telling me to leave him." "Did any of you take a sleeping pill?" Lily asked.
"Hell no, ma'am."
A tall man with dark skin and black eyes stepped out of the shadows.
"The captain said not to touch anything, and we didn't."
"You're Tucker Addison," she remembered his profile.
He had served in an anti-terrorist unit and had earned several medals. I need to look at his neck and the back of his head. Would you mind helping Ian roll him gently over?
I just want to say thank you, Dr. Whitney, for letting us set up a command post and camp here in your home.
His hands, as he assisted Ian in turning over Jeff Hollister, were incredibly gentle. He handled the man as if he were a baby. Lily bent over Jeff Hollister, running her fingers over his skull. His breathing was normal, his pulse steady. His skin was cooler than normal, and the pulse beat hard in his temple, but he appeared to be asleep. She gently pushed the hair from his neck and examined his skin. She couldn't see any visible signs of swelling or outward ruptures. Then the pads of her fingers found the scars. Jeff definitely had receptors behind his ears. Lily hissed out a swear word as she straightened. Was he taken to the clinic recently? Had someone other than me visited with him alone? She was furious, furious. Her fingers curled into a tight fist. Her father had a lot to answer for. Ryland stepped up quickly and ran his fingers around Jeff's skull, finding the same scars, feeling his way behind the man's ears. A muscle jerked in his jaw as he stepped back. Tucker and Ian carefully laid Jeff Hollister back on the sheets.